What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This week, part two, my interview with Jim Burrows, who is really the Babe Ruth and, I guess you'd say, the Cal Ripken of TV comedy directors. He has directed over 1,000 episodes of various sitcoms, including 240 episodes of Cheers, all of Will and Grace, 76 episodes of Taxi. Recently, he directed the live All in the Family Jeffersons reboot. He was one of the co-creators and showrunners of Cheers, along with Glenn and Les Charles. And in terms of awards, nominated for an Emmy every year between 1980 and 2005, except 1997. I don't know what happened that year. He has won 10 Emmys. He has also won 4 DGA awards. And he is a tremendous, tremendous director. He is also he's my mentor. If you missed part one, after you listen to this, go back and listen to part one. This week, we get into more of the technical aspects of directing, and I also delve into that live All in the Family Jeffersons reboot. And then we start talking about directing pilots. And pilots is a whole different animal with a lot of different requirements, and we'll talk about that. Also, some great stories about Friends, and we'll get into directing plays and what's going on in Broadway. So, a lot going on. Part two with my interview with Jim Burrows right here on Hollywood and Levine. So, let's talk a little bit about the cameras. One thing about you, I learned everything from you except camera blocking, because you go so fucking fast. Your camera block, I mean, how you keep all of that, and I only wish that the listeners could watch you do this, because camera blocking will usually take a number of hours, and you're just going, all right, Vonnie, up the line, and Bill, you pick up Shelley, and then you come around and give me a two, and you single out Norm, and it's like, what the hell is happening? And then it all falls into place. Is this just over time? I mean, you obviously don't prepare. You just, like, walk in and do it. But you have complicated scenes, you know, wedding scenes and things, you know. And you're just, it's like, to me, an amazing magic trick that you do.
I have a gift. I remember, I remember blocking, you know, so I just did a live special.
So I want to ask you about,
So the cameras in there, you have to lay out the shots. And I, you know, you have to write them down like I had to do in the old days. But I could remember. I didn't have to look at a tape. I didn't have to look at a iPhone or was recording to run through. I knew what the blocking was. So I have that gift. But in the first 2 years I camera blocked, I would take my script home the night before camera blocking, and I would write down A, B, C cameras on each line.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then what happened was, as as I would take my script in and do it, you know, on page 3 or page 4, my system that I had written down wouldn't work, so I had to improvise.
Right, because once you decide to go with camera B instead of camera C for this single, it throws off the entire rest of your pattern.
So I had to start making it up, and that's so I got that. And then there was always when I started out, there was always you had to get the cameras right on the camera day. Because for some reason, I don't know why that was. And then, you know, you on camera day, you run the cameras twice. And then you have the next day before you shoot, you have 3 or 4 hours with the cameras to perfect them. So I never felt that I had to get it right, that, I could just kind of block it out faintly and stuff like that. And I could have time to perfect. Plus, if you spend too long in camera blocking, your actors get bored, and you suck the energy out of the, you suck the energy out of the show. So eventually, like in year 3 or 4, I never blocked my script anymore.
Okay, let me put you on the spot. Even today, you watch the rough cut and go, "Damn, I should have gotten a 2-shot there. Why? Damn, why didn't I get that shot?" Does that ever happen to you?
No. I got it in my head the way it should be cut, and that's what I give you.
Uh-huh. So you pretty much edit in your head.
Yeah,
you could walk in and assemble an episode.
Shoot it to be edited the way I want. And then, as you know, like Will and Grace runs seven, 8 minutes long.
Right.
So the final editing I leave to the boys, Max and David, because it's about what you want to cut out of the show.
Right. But when you're blocking, you have to prepare for that and have singles and ways so that they can lift a whole section. If you're in a big master, you can't do that. Or if somebody jumps across the screen, you can't lift out a section. So you have to plan for that.
I have to. Yeah, well, There are much more sophisticated ways now to make cameras work. I mean, what they can do in the editing room with these machines.
Uh-huh.
You know, they can Zeus a show. You know what that means?
No.
They can take a show and run it a hair faster.
Right. Oh, okay.
So you know, people don't sound like Mickey and Minnie.
Right.
Just below that.
Right.
So that
sound like me.
Yeah. So the show can, you can have more time because right now we're 20 and a half minutes. When we were doing Cheers, it was 26 minutes.
Right.
So you don't have as much luxury in telling a story now like you used to have. So they can Zeus it, they call it, or they can blow up shots in the editing room, or they can blow down shots in the editing room. No, they can't blow down. They can only blow them up. And so
you can make that 2-shot. That
you can.
Didn't get.
No, because unless I shot that person, you can't do that.
Right.
You can't make a 2-shot.
Right.
You can blow it up.
But if you have a 3-shot and you want to turn it into a 2-shot,
you can
do. Okay. One of the things you used to do on the stage, I mean, now again, it's different. It's HD, but there used to be these big camera mounts. There were like 3 guys on a camera, and during the show, you'd like walk over and kick the cameras over. What was that all about?
It's just, you know, it's just better angles. And sometimes, see, I knew a lot of times where the cameras should be because I have that memory of where the blocking is. I know where the shot is going to be needed.
Right.
So I would try to improve the shot of a camera if I could. And, sometimes I remember one Cheers, the dolly grip got a little sick, and I pushed the camera for a scene.
Huh.
I did, because I knew, you know, where it was going and what was happening. It's just that instinct I have, but it's just making the shot better.
Okay.
And because it'll look better on TV.
So, I want to get back to the live show that you did recently, the All in the Family Jeffersons. Live, doing 2 shows, You also had cameras shooting Norman Lear and the audience. And how many cameras did you have? And oh God, what was that like? Like shooting the Super Bowl.
I'm not a live guy. You know, our shows are shot and then edited. But they wanted to do this live, and I said to Jimmy Kimmel, who called me, I said, I'm happy to do the sitcoms, but I don't know anything about those other shots of Norman and Jimmy and
right.
Jennifer Hudson and Woody and Marissa at the piano. So Jimmy used Andy Fisher, who directs his show,
okay.
to do the interstitials.
Uh-huh.
Because it's enough to try to switch live to sitcoms that are 25 minutes long each.
Right. Were you calling shots
yes.
during the show?
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh.
Sure. I spent a lot of time. I had a great AD named Marty Pizzetta, who I wanted an AD who was familiar with comedy.
Right.
So, and he was a big help. And I spent a lot of time on cameras. I spent a lot of time blocking the cameras and rehearsing. We did three, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Wednesday in front of the America, but Monday and Tuesday in front of a live audience.
Uh-huh.
Just to get me used to it, just to get the actors used to it. And, it turned out pretty good.
It turned out great.
I saw it a couple of days after I shot it, and there are a couple of camera moves that we, you know, were just late, and there's one cut that was late. But other than that, it was pressure. It's just... Because I did two live Will and Grace's too, and it's you feel a lot of pressure.
Well, with the All in the Family thing too, you also had to wrangle a lot of actors.
Yeah.
So you know, and I'm sure there were some of the actors that you had never worked with before.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I have to say, everybody was glorious. Everybody was wonderful. Everybody was friendly. Everybody knew what this was all about. Everybody was supportive of one another. Everybody was cheering. The All in the Family cast watched the Jeffersons. The Jeffersons cast watched All in the Family's cast. There were no egos.
That's great.
There were no egos there. Just before we have a read-through, a speed-through always before we shoot a show, and I had a speed-through with both shows, and I said... to them, I said, please enjoy yourself because this is never going to happen again.
Uh-huh.
This moment will never happen again. And it was just thrilling. It was just, and to work with Norman and to be able to do these two iconic shows, which I never thought
yeah,
would happen.
Yeah, and you never directed those.
No, I had never done those. Either one of them, no.
You've directed a lot of pilots. Let's talk for a minute about pilots and the unique situations, because you have to establish the characters, establish the tone. You're dealing with actors who are trying to find their characters. Talk a little bit about the special requirements that go into doing a pilot.
Pilots are... I don't know what the right word for it. It's this ephemeral thing that you read a script that the writers have written and you like the script, and then you're going to make a pilot episode, and then you got to be lucky enough to cast it right. So that's another ephemeral thing that you don't know will work. And then you have to be put in the right time slot, another ephemeral thing that you don't.
Right.
So there's all this amorphous things going on, and it requires a lot of luck. And I always use this example of one year I did, I was signed to do four pilots in 1994, and then my agent, Bob Broder, sent me a script. It was called Six of One. And it would later change its title to Friends.
Uh-huh. Heard
and
of that.
And I said to Broder, I said, I have to do this show. He says, you have no time. I said, you got to make time. So we made time. And it was the last pilot I did. And those six people were available.
Yeah, if so, those six people are not available, if one is assigned to another show or one is in Morocco doing a movie, yeah.
It's crazy, so there's that luck involved. So you have that, then you have to get, you have to start rehearsing, and you have to, you know, I spend 8 days on a pilot and only 5 days on a, when I'm doing a regular show. And we sit around and we talk. I remember sitting around a bar at Cheers with all the characters. Where are you from? What are you doing? What does a bar mean to you? You know, all this stuff. Not necessarily really profound,
right?
But just to make you feel comfortable with me, comfortable in the set, comfortable with the other actors. And then you, you know, you try to fit all these people into a car. You know, and the car is sometimes small, sometimes big, and you want everybody to be seated comfortably in the car, and you want the car to run. And so you have to, you know, take the different styles. I mean, I think the most diverse show pilot I ever did is Taxi, because the cast was not necessarily all from the same world. You had a couple of Broadway people like Judd and Danny and Mary Lou. And then you had Tony, who was a boxer.
Right.
And you had Andy Kaufman, who was a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Conaway, who'd worked a little bit on Broadway. And, you know, you had to mold these people into this homogeneous group that, again, as I said it before, you try to make them like one another. Because if they like one another, they're going to, that's going to come across the screen. And I think, you know, in Taxi and Cheers, it was more difficult for me because I didn't have a reputation then.
Right.
Now, when I do a pilot, people will listen to me and, you know, understand from my experience.
Well, you bring your 32 Emmys with you, right? You just set them down on the podium and just say, okay, so what are your network notes?
Yeah. I don't bring the Emmys. I have pictures on the iPhone.
Is it true? The story I always heard was that after an early run-through on Friends, the network said, well, there should be an authority figure. We should make one of them a star. And you were the one that said, no, it should be an ensemble with all six. And it is a true ensemble.
It is. I don't remember that story. I do remember it. You know, we thought in the beginning that it was almost Monica's kids because it was Monica's apartment and they were all friends of Monica. And she was, but Marta and David, to their credit, they were genius writers. They wrote three stories an episode.
Right.
So it was not necessarily an A story as such.
Right.
And so all six of them were equally talented. So there was not, I just think it became that kind of show by default because they were, you know, all, you could write an A story about them, about any one of them. My job is, when I do a pilot now, as opposed to, you know, the Taxi pilot or the Cheers pilot now in the 90s, when I started in the after Cheers went off the air, it's my job to protect the writer's vision.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I try to do. So when I pick a script to direct, I like the vision the writers have, and it's my job to shepherd that vision through all the processes, including the network. Well, the network then will try to homogenize the vision.
Yes, they will.
And so it's my job to say, no, you can't do that. No more exemplary example than Will and Grace. You know, they were concerned with the gayness of the show, and I said, well, that is the show.
That is the show, yeah.
So,
and now they take credit for how groundbreaking it is.
But, you know, that on Friends, that was my, you know, there was, in the opening episode, Monica's story is she goes to bed with a guy named Paul the Wine Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul the Wine Guy, in the second act, she goes to work. She's a chef. She goes to work with her sous chef who tells her that she also slept with Paul the Wine Guy. So Monica's just devastated.
Right.
Because Paul the Wine Guy said, I want to sleep with you, Monica, because nobody's been able to make, I've been impotent.
Mm-hmm.
So the network came and said, we have a problem with that. Can she just kiss Paul the Wine Guy? And I said, you know, because I was the 800-pound gorilla on that show. I said, right. No, you can't do that.
Right.
There's no stakes if that happens.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's my life now, an 800-pound gorilla.
Millennials have discovered Friends.
Oh,
I think Friends is more popular now than when it was originally on the air. Why do you think Friends strikes a chord in so many young people? What is it about that show that makes it so special?
It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And there are characters you can relate to. And there's genius writing. Genius writing. Can't believe it took 9 years for that show to win an Emmy as best show.
Mm-hmm.
Because the writing was genius on that show. And the actors. The actors who are incredibly adept. And, you know, when I would rehearse that show, I only did like 13 or 14 of them in the early years. They are so gifted and so smart and so creative that you can just sit back and let them do it themselves.
Mm.
And they're endearing, and they're pretty, and they're funny. And the kids love them. You know, that show will go on forever.
Oh, I think it will.
It's going to be like Lucy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It strikes a chord amongst young people. And it's not that dirty, so you can start watching it when you're 9 or 10. And it's just amazing.
And Will and Grace, what was it like going back and doing the reboot after all of those years between the final Will and Grace and now coming back? Is a sense of deja vu, I guess.
It was amazing. The kids, I still call them kids, the four of them, they hadn't changed that much, so that was easy. They, you know, we put glasses on them. We told older stories. It's still maybe the funniest show I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
It's outrageous. You know, I mean, it's a different kind of humor than Cheers or Friends. It's more, you know, I call it a fairy tale, literatively and figuratively. And they, you know, you do jokes on that show you couldn't do on any other show. And it was just seamless going back and doing it again. Everybody was on board. Everybody thought it would never happen. And all of a sudden it happened. And what an opportunity. And I like to say, you can go homo again.
Yeah. Okay, so you've also directed some plays. Speaking of going home again, do you ever, in the back of your mind, think, maybe I want to go full circle and direct something on Broadway?
No, I don't think I want to do anything on Broadway. The last play I did The Man Who Came to Dinner at the Steppenwolf Theater with John Mahoney.
Uh-huh.
And I love doing that. I had a ball. You know, it's a Kaufman and Hart script.
Right.
I knew George, but George Kaufman.
Wow.
He directed Guys and Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew him to be, you know, he was intimidating sort. He was tall and he was curmudgeonly.
Right.
But my dad loved him. And to do one of his plays was a gas. I put my interpretation on some parts of it, and it was successful, and Mahoney was great, and working at Steppenwolf was wonderful, but I don't think I'd ever want to go back to Broadway. Broadway's changed now so much.
Mm.
You know, it's all about pyrotechnics and stuff like that.
Right.
The simple plays don't come around anymore.
Yeah. Final question. You've been doing this for so many years, and yet you seem to have such enthusiasm. And it's a physical job. You're on your feet all day, every day. I mean, it is a physical job. What is it about directing that you still find so fulfilling? Why you're still so passionate about it?
For every show I do, there's an opening night. There's a night we shoot the show in front of the audience. And it's exhilarating. We're doing 18 more Will and Graces this year, and I have 18 more opening nights. And to hear an audience laugh at something you have a hand in really gets the endorphins going. And I wouldn't do a show if it was drudgery for me or if I wasn't having fun. I have to have fun.
Sure.
So I have fun on the show. It's a wonderful show. Max and David write a wonderful show. The acting is great, and the stories are different. And I don't want to retire. I don't know how many more years we have left on Will and Grace, but I don't know what I'll do after. But if something makes me smile, then maybe I'll do that.
Great. Well, again, personally, thank you so much for all you've done for me, how much I have learned from you. And this was really a treat having you sit down and talk.
I loved it, Ken.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Again, our thanks to Jim Burrows for being my guest. And like I said before, if you have not listened to part one, go back right now and listen to last week's show. Wow. Lot of great stuff. Okay, thanks to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolford, Bruce, and Jason Miller. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Levine. I'm also on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. And you can email me anytime, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. If you have not subscribed, what is wrong with you? Come on, subscribe to the podcast. Also, I know I'm being shameless again, but I could use a 5-star review. Back again with more next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Hollywood and Levine.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.